two. All right, we're going to start with a recording. You heard Sam mention several things. You'll hear his voice as he is saying goodbye to the two cops who came to the front door. He's very cordial, very pleasant. They walk away, and then you'll hear some rustling. I'll point that out to you. What that is one of the cops pulling out his live audio mic and turning it off. So he thought...
Thinking he's turning it off.
He didn't turn it off. And then you'll hear
one thing I do want to mention.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if Mom has talked to you about it, but there was a huge lapse where my neighbor was watching everything in real time, and she was the key eyewitness. Have we been through this?
Yes.
Yeah, I mentioned it in the text that's attached to the interview.
It's up there under Charlotte's name.
The situation with her was that 911 did not call EMS, Emergency Medical Services, for 21 and a half minutes. Mm-hmm. And what we are suspicious of is the fact that I think the officer here who tourniqueted my leg was wondering where on earth the ambulance was.
Oh, he'd have to be.
Because why wouldn't they just immediately call? And we don't have any recording of them calling for 911 EMS services. And so I think he was here just thinking, where on earth is the ambulance?
Did your neighbor call?
Oh, yeah, she called in the beginning.
That's what I'm saying. I want to make that clear. She phoned right away, but there was no EMS response.
No.
Okay. All right, hold on. Now let's play this tape. You're going to hear the primary voice in the beginning, very cordially telling goodbye and blah, 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 and then you're going to hear some rustling.
Part of that cordially is the fact that I knew that they were here to shoot me because of the way they approached me.
So you were being extra cordial because you knew you were being stalked.
Because I knew I was in extreme danger.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Here we go.
Not being paranoid, but the way that they flanked me.
I understand. Well, you're a military veteran, an American patriot hero.
Right.
You know what's going on.
I know what thinking looks like. Right?
All right.
And I saw the attitude of the officer who was the one who wanted to shoot me.
Okay, got it. All right, here we go with the tape. This will be Sam's voice you'll hear primarily.
Take care. And sorry for Michael, but I wish for that one that you got your hand was the teeth. Pretty well educated, very nice. And you guys have been excellent.
Tough day.
Yeah. Take care. Hope so. Take care.
Okay, so that's Sam saying goodbye to the two cops, one of whom had just come to kill him. He's being extra nice, and you can hear that. Here we go. Now you're going to hear some rustling. I'll point that out to you.
Where do you fucking snipe? Huh?
Yeah, he's turning it off now. Thinks he is, anyway. There it is. Now they think that the mic is off. One of the cops said, it's not federal now. It's in the background, but it's there very clearly. The mic is off.
Right.
It's not federal now. Here we go.
Yeah, he says it's not federal now or not federal anymore.
He says now.
But same idea. All right.
Same thing. It's not federal now. All right, here we go.
I figured we could ride him out front. If he moved, I could just pop him right in the head right there. That was my plan.
I could just pop him right in the head, drive him around in the front. In other words, make him move from a flank position and pop him. Real clear.
You did it yourself.
Oh, hold on.
I was already going. Grant starts on the phone.
All right, he's talking about Graham being on the phone and the chief being on the phone, and he says, you can tell there's something.
Grant and the chief being on the phone, which is a monitor situation.
Mm-hmm. That's right. All right, let me play this again now. I want everyone to hear this, and you'll get it. It's very clear. All right. Here's Sam again being very cordial because he knew something was wrong. Can't be much nicer than that. So they're walking away now. You're still hearing their audio. Now he's going to pull the mic and try to turn it off. Now he's turning it off. Here's the rustling. All right, now they think they're off the air. Not federal now.
We can ride him out front if he moves. I could just pop him right in the head right there. That's my plan. You did it yourself. I was all ready to go. Grant starts on the phone. What he said. You can tell there's something off with him.
You guys see Grant and Heather?
Yeah. That was a sneaky relationship.
Okay, that's enough. That's the tape.
Yep.
There's really no way to misinterpret what's being said there.
We've listened to it a million times.
I'm sure you have. Well, it was very clear to our listeners, and it's out there now. So there we are. All right. Now let's, Sam, we don't have 2 hours. We've got to do this in the next 45 minutes. So please go ahead and let's step into it.
A very quick thing.
Yeah.
Is that these two officers were given officer of the month 2 months prior to this situation happening with me, which means the chief was giving him an apple.
Oh, yeah. All right. Got
they
it.
Both, if you look on the internet, got officer of the month in August, and I got in that disaster 2 months later.
Yeah.
I got it. Good boys follow orders and get decorations.
Yeah, Steve was giving them something, and they had to give them something back.
Hmm.
Right.
All right. That's why a lot of officers get decorated. All right, Sam, so what happened next? Now, you've explained that this ex-girlfriend or whatever had a daughter, and she was picking up her things and so forth. So what happened?
They call it a keep the peace situation, which I've never had a situation in my life regarding anybody who was worried about me of any sort.
Keep the peace situation. Yeah. Uh-huh.
What's that?
They call it a keep the peace situation,
keep
all right?
Keep the peace. And I talked to her ex-husband, and he said, oh, she's got a huge history of doing this sort of thing, even on him or anybody else. And I didn't know she was on third types of medication, but at the same time, her daughter, when I decided everything was going to be over, was going after her mother about not taking her medication, which I didn't even know about.
Sam, listen, you got to move on because you got so much more to talk about. The next part of it is so relevant, and Jeff doesn't have enough time.
Medication, that's the problem. And so she called the police to come to my house to make sure that everything was safe when I'm not the type of person to be agitated or regressive or anything.
All right, not belligerent. All right, so she wanted to come and get her things, but she wanted to put the burden on you, so she called the police and said, this guy may be a threat to me. I need you to keep the peace when I come to get my things. Old tricks.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, and the old tricks are the fact that I told her to come and get the stuff, and she said, I'll be back. This was on a Monday, and she said, I'll come on Saturday. I said, I want everything out of here now. I'm going to put it on the porch.
Okay. Don't forget, you got a lot more to talk about than that.
She said, hold on. She said, I'll be right over. I'll just get the stuff. And the next thing I know, I have police banging on my door, flashlights all over the place.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So then what happened?
And so I walked out on the porch with the police, and I talked to them. And, she came in my house, which wasn't really, allowed for the most part. But I don't care. Go get your stuff. And so I talked to the police, and then they asked, do you mind if we come in your house? And I wondered, what on earth do you want to come to my house for? There's no reason whatsoever. They're going and getting their stuff. So you're welcome to, go and get your stuff and leave, and the police can just talk to me on the porch. And so nothing really, you know, negative came up with the police except for the fact that this, you know, banging on the door, which could have been damaging to them.
That's what cops do. But let's get to the point where you get shot now. What happened?
He gets taken to the police station, too. Sam, pick up on the story where they took you to the police station overnight and charged you $500 bail, and then you were watched for 8 months or something, monitoring your house and checking license plates. And we've been monitored constantly, our phone calls, et cetera, until finally we end up with his case being dismissed because he won it on his own. And then a month later, we have the Fred Dodge attempted murder.
All right. Now let's get to the point where you were shot. I'm sorry. Let me back up, Sam. Sam, hold on. Hold on. Sam. Yeah, hold on a second. Did Charlotte, did you say that that night when the police came to, quote, keep the peace, he was taken in that night?
No.
Okay. No. All right, he was not. All right, very good.
He was delivered, notice of not harassing the police chief's wife, you know, trying to get through to the chief. He was given a notice, right? And then he apologized. He called the police chief's wife and left a message apologizing, sorry to have bothered you.
Right.
And that was considered a violation of him of him contacting her.
Uh-huh.
And that's when they came and picked him up and put him in the paddy wagon and injured him a bit and kept him sort of overnight, charged $500 bail and monitored his house for 6 months. And then we end up with him winning that particular harassment case himself, mm-hmm. without mm-hmm. a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after that is when the attempted Fred Dodge that attempted to murder him and just about succeeded, right? That's how it went.
All right. Well, let's hear that part. Tell us what happened to get you shot like this.
From my angle?
Your angle. This is obviously from your angle, yeah.
Right. The whole situation started out from, obviously, me getting into an argument with the police chief and his wife, who actually, oddly enough, is a detective in the police department, which is a conflict of interest because her husband is the chief, and so therefore she should not be under him due to the fact that she is subordinate to her husband, who is the chief. So I'll move on from there. I called the police chief. He would not answer. I talked to the secretary, multiple phone calls, and then I actually ended up finding out a phone number for the family. I figured that's on your home phone. Turned out to be her cell phone because she has a cell phone number on for a, which sounds somewhat ridiculous, but, you know, sort of a dog tchotchke type of website that she runs and she makes.
Okay, now,
so,
Sam, hold on. You're talking about the police chief's wife, and why are you trying to contact her? To apologize? What are you doing?
I was trying to contact his house.
Her husband.
Oh, you're still trying to get in touch with the chief, and no one will talk to you. Okay.
Well, let me say something here. What's interesting, in the middle of this, the chief called me. I called the chief.
Hey, Sam, hold on, Sam. I got you. Let Charlotte talk just for a minute here. I want to get her.
Look,
go ahead.
Sam had tried over and over to get him, and he was never referred by anybody to a subordinate to say, well, Mr. Iserbeid, we can give you the chief's deputy, right? Never, never. But you know what did happen? I called to try to defuse the whole situation, and the police chief called me back immediately. He called me back, and I tried to be very polite and everything, and he said, no, he was not going to meet with us. It was a matter of his wife. And so he refused. But it's interesting that after Sam had tried 10 times or so to get through to him and couldn't, but when I called, immediately when I hung up, because the secretary said, I'll try to get him to call you back, he called me back immediately. Why? Why me? And Sam, no, would not talk to Sam. So anyway, we should move on, though, to the next incident, Sam.
Right.
Go ahead with that. You know how it goes with radio. You know, you got to move fast.
Okay, Sam, go ahead.
Where are we starting?
How did you get shot?
How did I get shot? It's a pretty complicated situation, and you've seen situations like that yourself. But
many
what
times.
They did was they tried to figure out, from what I can tell, as best I can understand, is that they set up a situation where they tried to figure who I was in touch with and who I knew and who, you know, a female involved in the situation and a male involved in the situation, who I actually knew when I was basically a teenager. And he had actually, at which point I, you know, dissolved our friendship, told me that he had pulled hits for authorities. And so that's when I dissolved our friendship. But then again, I ended up being the one who they used to pull a hit on me. They first tried to use the police officers, and it didn't work out because what I, from military standards, know is that the parameters didn't match. And that meant that Officer Hurley wasn't in the right place, and there are cameras around my neighborhood because there's a hospital here. But what happened was that Fred Dodge was used, maybe because they have something on him or he has something on them. And so therefore, there was a pressure situation where they used him, because I can tell you flat out, Fred Dodge would never try to shoot me. And he knows we have a lot of friends in common, and they are not his friends anymore. But somebody made him do that job that was the coming to my house and actually using my gun on me, because I didn't want to.
All right. Well, I don't know Fred Dodge from Adam. I don't know anything about Fred Dodge. But the situation is, apparently this gentleman came to your home. You had a self-defense sidearm, and that sidearm ended up shooting you in the leg and cut your femoral artery. Correct?
Hello, Sam. He's gone, I guess. Well, what happened is...
Well, they may have cut him off. This happens. Okay. I don't... I'm in the middle here as just a journalist trying to get facts, figures,
well,
who, what,
good,
where,
I
when,
think,
why.
The text that's connected with this interview gives the whole story. But what happened was first of all, the witnesses all signed statements were taken down at the police station, said they saw him. They did not see the key eyewitness saw the event, saw Sam be shot and go down on the porch.
Really?
She saw it all. She was taken to the police station. She was interrogated, and we have the witness statements. Now, the other witness statements were people who were on the sidewalk who saw Fred Dodge coming down with a gun out, screaming and yelling, I'm going to murder you. That's in their testimony.
So this is an eyewitness report saying that this man was going up to Sam's door with a gun?
Mm-hmm. Yep, screaming, I'm going to murder you. The girls, the women, they were going to the hospital. Baby was being born or something. They were just taking a walk.
There's more than one eyewitness to this?
Yep, two. Two, and then there's another one, too. I mean, they were all telling the same story, what they heard.
Okay.
And then the eyewitness, though, didn't hear all the murderous comments on the street, but she saw the actual incident, and she reported it on the phone to 911 as it was happening. And then one of the lead detectives right after said, take her down to the police station. We want her to sign the statements. They all signed their statements. So let me point out, there were no witness statements for Fred Dodge. All the witness statements were in favor of Sam's, corroborated Sam's story, including the sergeant I was talking about before, who actually has kept me going for months. Thank God for him. And Bennis, who saved Sam's life, I do believe. You know, so we have all of that. Now, you were asking about how it happened. What he did, Sam had a laser sight on his gun, right, Dot? And so Sam sat, he was sitting the whole time. When Fred came on the steps, Sam
was sitting on his front.
On
Sam is sitting on the front porch.
Yeah,
he's got his firearm legally.
Yep, and he points it at Dodge. When Dodge points his gun at him, Sam pulls his out. It's a rifle. He pulls it out, and the laser dot. And Sam figured he'll never come towards me now. He'll stop. He didn't. So he just went towards Sam, grabbed the rifle out of Sam's hand and threw it in the ground, and then went for Sam pulled his pistol out or whatever it is, and then he grabbed with both his hands the pistol and rammed it into Sam's femoral artery and pulled the trigger.
Where was this gentleman? Where was his sidearm at this point? He was observed to have come up to the porch with... Well, I know. I'm just being formal here. The man, even the British...
He threw it on the ground.
All right, why would he... hold on. He threw his gun on the ground. He grabbed Sam's rifle after that, threw that down.
So he never threw his gun on the ground.
Oh, he didn't. Yeah. Okay, let's get that straight.
So he always kept it in his hand.
He threw Sam's rifle on the ground.
He was able to grab your rifle and throw it on the ground while still holding on to his firearm, all right?
Right.
And then you pulled your sidearm.
Fred Otis Dodge is 6'7", so you can imagine how long his hands are.
All right. So you pulled your self-defense weapon on your property, on your front porch. This man had come up there. All right. And he grabbed it and tried to wrestle it from you and pointed it down toward your leg, and the gun went off. Who pulled the trigger?
He did, but he didn't point it. He pressed it into my leg. I watched the muzzle of the 9mm pistol of mine, and he had both hands around it, and he pressed it about an inch and a half into my leg, and then the bullet went off.
All right. Now, all of you listening can see the result of this gunshot wound by looking at the jeans that are pictured there under Charlotte's name. And again, I'm simply asking questions here, trying to investigate this from my own perspective. I'm hearing a very clear narrative here. You went down at that time. Did Mr. Dodge say anything after the gun went off?
No.
Do you remember?
Nope. I said, Fred, you just shot me. And he told the police that I said, Fred, I just shot myself.
Oh. Okay. Charlotte?
Yeah, no, that's the story. And let me make a point here that we have not at any time made any statement in writing or on radio or anything that did not come straight from the police department, the district attorney's office themselves. They gave us everything we've ever said. Now, if anybody can find anything we've said that didn't come from them...
Okay, in other words, what you're saying is everything you've related to us on the program tonight is now recorded officially district attorney documents and police documents that you have. All right.
Yes, they gave everything to us, and they have done nothing. They've dug their own grave because they know they don't have a case, and every time they lie, you know how lying is, you have to lie again, and they keep lying, and Sam and I laugh about it. We say, you know, we'd like to find one bit of truth that has come out of the district attorney's office that we could just look at and say, they told the truth. They haven't. It gets worse and worse and worse.
All right, well, let me go back here. I just want to back this up a little bit. A man, whoever he is, I got the name, comes to your house, Sam.
Right.
You're sitting on the porch with a rifle. You also have a sidearm. You're just sitting on the porch. This guy comes up with an exposed handgun. He is observed by the neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
He's right, yelling. Well, he's going. He's yelling. What is he yelling again?
I'm going to murder you.
I'm going to murder. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to murder you. In other words,
but that is exactly what he said.
So you felt at that time that your life was in danger, I would imagine.
But I still didn't fire.
Understand. A lot of people wouldn't have that restraint. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I just couldn't believe it was happening, because what I can tell you, and I think I mentioned it before, is that Fred Dodge would never shoot me unless he was under orders from somebody that I did not know about. And I had heard about his discussion with me regarding the fact that he had actually executed somebody, at which point our friendship broke apart. And I had heard that about 2 months before that, where he walked into a building and he went over into the right side stairway and he went up the stairway and he put a bullet through somebody's head. And Fred Dodge is somebody that I've been acquainted with, but not, you know, tight friends in our early, you know, teens and 20s.
Right.
But his life had changed, and I hadn't talked to him for 27 years, you know.
Well, these allegations of him being someone who has pulled hits for the police,
right,
or whomever, came again from whom?
From him.
From Fred.
Was he boasting? He was
that.
Boasting about this?
Yeah, well, we can't use that. They wouldn't let us use it because it's just... hearsay, right?
I wouldn't say necessarily boasting, but he was telling me about a situation. And, you know, oddly enough, the person that he had shot, the story he told, was, you know, it was not a good person. But at the same time, you don't have the right to go pulling hits on people like that. You know, the story he told was somebody who is probably a bad person, but at the same time, who made him do the hit?
All right. Well, we're getting into an area that is not directly relevant to this storyline.
Right. Well, that's why we can't really talk.
Yeah. Okay.
That's one part of the story that we don't have anything but what Fred told.
But
Sam.
Again, Charlotte and Sam, all of this, hold on. I need to underscore this. All of that which you are relating to us is in official documentation.
Oh, they didn't put
that part. But what I'm trying to explain is that he apparently is under control from somebody, and we actually have notification from other people that he has a male and female handler who are actually in control of him.
Right. Well, if that's true, it's not uncommon in this country at all. So.
It's not, but none of this is in the record. This is just what Sam was told. They wouldn't allow any of this, what we talked about recently, right? They would not. That's not in any of the records.
Oh, so you submitted it, but it was declined. They wouldn't allow it in.
They would not put that in because it makes sense. It's just coming from us. They don't have proof.
Okay.
So, but it's coming from us.
All right.
Through him, right.
All right, so you're laying on the porch. You said you just shot me. How bad is the pain?
Hardly bad at all.
Because you're full of adrenaline?
Well, you've heard before when people get shot, they actually don't even know they've been shot.
I've heard that.
And it sounded like, you know, it felt like there was a worm crawling through my leg at about 5 miles an hour.
What a strange description. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it felt like. I mean, it didn't hurt.
Right. But so
all I could think was that, you know, I hope that didn't hit my femoral artery. And all of a sudden I started spraying like a garden hose. And I realized, okay, yep, it hit my femoral artery correctly.
Now, the man you say pulled the trigger of your own gun and shot you in the leg, turned and walked away, correct?
Yep.
Said nothing.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then he called the police. He called the police and he reported to the police right away. Sam shot himself in the leg.
But what I think is probably most important in this situation, Jeff, is the fact that we have phone records from Fred to the police department 4 days before I got shot.
Yep. That's in discovery.
Probably the most important thing you need to hear about this, because he had apparently multiple conversations with somebody, and then there was a burner phone in his house that they clipped out of the evidence for the grand jury hearing. And so when they handed that to me, I have the pictures. I can send them pictures to you of the cracked burner phone. And there's a Benjamin Franklin $100 note right beside it, which I think you know what that's about. So there's a Masonic tone because Fred's a Mason. And the phone had been cracked in half and the back had been removed. And obviously the SIM card had been removed. And they never used that as any evidence. And so when they went to Fred's house, they were Fred's house before they were at my house. That's the other side.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
The person is bleeding to death, and they're at Fred's house first. And then they take the handcuffs off him and let him smoke cigarettes, and they all have a chit-chat.
Yep.
And you're laying on the porch bleeding to death?
I'm lying inside my house.
Yeah, bleeding to death. That's right.
Uh-huh. This is, again, one of those stories that, for those of you listening, some of you have heard things as crazy as this, I'm sure. It's a crazy culture we live in.
Well, that's why I say I want the people out there. It's not for us. Sam's still alive. I'm alive. But I want the, especially Mainers, have got to wake up and realize we've got a bad situation in the state with the judicial system. Very serious. And they better wake up and start listening. And, you know, Senator King, Angus King, my senator, he knows about this. He's put Sam on the no-call list. That's Angus King. And our Governor LePage, he knows about it, and he's done nothing about it.
All right. These people are, my reflex is that they're attempting to cover this up.
Yes, sir. For some reason, we have a very serious situation here in the state of Maine, in many areas, not just this
Well,
time.
Interestingly enough, to break in, is that Governor LePage's aide has now been introduced to be Donald Trump's speechwriter.
Yeah, how about it? Well, that has really nothing to do with it, but it gives you an idea, people out there.
I know it has nothing to do with it, but it does tell you that there's something really strange going on between Maine and Washington.
Let me point out that Marchese, the one who's, you'll see the notes that are attached to this,
right, this
interview.
Is all, let me tell our listeners.
She is a deputy attorney general that I talked to.
She's number two.
Number two. And
right.
She said, if you can believe this, she told Sam that the attorney general to whom this case was given, because the district attorney in Cumberland County couldn't deal with it any longer, she turned it over to the attorney general's office. But Marchese, who's the deputy, said to Sam that the attorney general knows nothing about this case. And that we certainly do not believe.
Please.
But that's that same Marchese who said she didn't want to talk to me. And there's a whole list of stuff that I listed there. I asked her all these questions. The major one that she couldn't answer was, I said, well, you know, she's very well known with forensics. She's on all those TV detective things and all. She's brilliant on forensics. And I said, why didn't you do any testing in Sam's case? And she said, well, there wasn't any evidence to test.
Oh, really? I see. Well, all right.
Fred's finger is on my trigger.
His fingerprint is on the trigger of your weapon?
Right, and
yes.
DNA.
Yes. And
oh, so you've got...
It.
All right, the evidence begins to pile up here. We have his fingerprint and DNA on your firearm.
Never tested,
right.
Though.
And what is interesting, which you'll find kind of amazing, is that the detective who is supposed to be the chief detective, who is Beaumont, asked me if I wanted them to actually fingerprint my weapon. Why do I have any right to tell them what to do?
That's a very, very strange thing.
And I know this. I know how fingerprinting works. And then fingerprinting actually, you know, if they do fingerprinting, they use super glue. So it destroys everything. But at the same time, they took a buccal swab from Fred Dodge, and they could have done a DNA test on the buccal swab to find out if his finger was on my weapon, and at which point they would have found it was.
Yep.
But that wasn't done.
So they didn't do anything.
It wasn't done. And let me mention this.
But at what point does a police department give a victim or a defendant any choice of what they're going to test.
Right, of course, of course. This is all routine. It should have been a reflex, and
well, let me make a point here.
I don't have any right to tell them what to do.
No, all right, go ahead, Charlotte.
Look, Jeff, I want to make a very clear point here. The assistant district attorney who came and talked to us about 3 weeks after the incident came to Sam's house. She said that she couldn't for the state prosecute because they didn't have enough evidence. And we were shocked. We said, what do you mean, all these witness statements and all? She said, well, no, we can't. Okay, well, what happened? About 2 months later, in a meeting that I took shorthand at with the assistant DA, it was very difficult, who obviously was in the chief's pocket and the DA's pocket, I took shorthand, and he said that that particular woman, the ADA, had said, we better take another look at this. I may have been mistaken. And I know she said that. That is terribly important because she was the first one to come to us and say that the district attorney wasn't going to be able to prosecute Fred because they didn't have enough evidence. She had been sent on a mission, and she shouldn't have believed what she was told, but she did. And we were shocked when she said that. But I give her credit for having tried to take another look at this case. I may have been mistaken.
Interesting statement.
But she was a soldier.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is being this seems to be being volleyballed around. They don't know what to do at this point in time. And now, for our listeners, for me as a reporter, have there been any indictment?
Yes, both Fred and Sam on the same one.
That is a double felony.
Yep.
Okay. Let me get this from Charlotte. Sam, hold on.
Okay, they trashed the original excellent police department report, which had elevated aggravated assault, which would have been Fred, right? They trashed that, and they rewrote, because they called for a grand jury hearing. They rewrote new charges, which were identical for Fred and Sam, which were criminal threat. What?
No, he coughed. Go ahead.
Criminal threatening with a dangerous weapon and reckless conduct with a dangerous weapon. These were new charges. The elevated aggravated assault, which dealt with Fred, was wiped. And so they came up with these new charges, two new indictments for both of them. And then our attorney, who we thought was going to be good, cooperated with Fred, with Sam's prosecutor, the district attorney, the attorney, or ADA, whatever.
Robert Ellis.
Cooperated, that's Bud Ellis, Robert Bud Ellis, our attorney cooperated with him to come up with identical for
charges.
Dismissal. This was in the dismissal.
Yeah.
Dismissal with prejudice and being allowed both of them to take the Fifth Amendment if they ever went to court.
So that was their effort to eradicate this as an issue.
It was their effort to get Fred Dodge off the hook.
Okay.
And they got him off the hook because our lawyer never dealt with Sam in any way other than emails and never explained to Sam the implications of this new the dismissal charge with prejudice and the Fifth. And Samuel never signed anything. And so our lawyer just went ahead and submitted it, and it's final now.
That who is this? Wait a minute.
So in other words, what happened is our whole almost 2 years of trying to get Fred Dodge went straight down the toilet, and Fred Dodge is free.
So the case is officially closed?
Yes.
It's over and done.
Yeah,
it's a matter of public. This is all a matter of public record.
Yep.
It's a done deal. It's on record. I could find all this data myself, basically.
You can.
Most of it. And it's summarized under Charlotte's name. Now, this is a very convoluted, very stressful and difficult story. And I'm sure, again, as I said in the very beginning of the program, I invited Charlotte to tell this story and Sam, who joined us, because these things are not uncommon. These kinds of things where, and I will use the word if, local law enforcement, county, and maybe even state work to cover these up, make them go away. They're ugly. They could compromise very powerful people. They don't want this, so they make them vanish. That's seemingly what happened here. Now, are you still trying to make something happen with this, Charlotte?
Oh, we sure are. We're going to go for it. And I'll tell you, the other part of it is, after, Sam, the last incident, we decided to go for a tort against the complete city of Portland. We named, I don't know how many people, including the mayor, the city manager, the elected council, some police, et cetera, AD, the DA, everybody. And she had hysterics. That's when she decided to go for the grand jury hearing and to change the charges, so that Fred could get off.
So she is. What was this woman's name?
Her name is Stephanie Anderson.
Okay, and she made this come together in such a way that both
Fred got off.
Both, well, yes, in their mind, both get off, but that's not what really happened, apparently.
Right.
Well, Sam never did it. How could Sam get
right.
off?
Well, when
what
you talk
Sam
about finger,
of?
When
Sam,
you talk about fingerprints. When you talk about forensics not being done, I don't understand that. How can that be?
Nobody does, especially since the deputy attorney general, as I said, is meant to be one of the experts in the United States, I think,
right,
for forensics testing.
Right. I got it. Well, that's another angle. This is, it's not normal. That's not normal at all. There's nothing normal about this thing.
No, it's very abnormal,
I mean,
because they're lying. You know, when you lie, things become...
Am I here?
You go ahead, Sam.
Hello?
Go ahead. Yeah. You're on.
Fred Dodd is protected at the highest level for a reason we don't know, except it may be very involved in pedophilia.
Now, we don't know. When you say maybe, we have to qualify that as
a
maybe.
Well, maybe his laptop was extracted from him by CCU in the state of Maine by Glenn Lang, who I went to high school with, and they took his laptop, and it kind of disappeared, and Fred is a mason.
Who took
and
it? Wait,
he's
who
not
took?
Allowed to see his daughter. He's
who?
Hold
on. Sam, I got to stop you, because this is not directly pertaining to the story
no,
at
we,
hand.
We really can't go in there, but
well,
since
no, this,
we have...
This is what... not about stopping me, but this is about the fact that Fred is protected.
Okay. Well, that's your next step
that's
in this process.
That's why he's not in prison.
Well, understand.
All
right.
But we have absolutely no evidence that we can present in regard to that. We have big questions, because there are cases out there, especially one in Maine, I'm not going to mention it, that is being covered up to the hilt, a very tragic case. And we have a lot of that going on here. And in other states, you have it too.
We
but
have,
our case is
we
distinct.
Have it everywhere.
It's absolutely distinct from that subject.
Right, understand.
Well, one of the things that Fred Dodge had extracted from his phone by Eli Chase, who's in the Portland community of the police department, is that he has got a lot of activity on daughterswap.com.
Okay, all right. Again, I don't want to go there,
well,
Sam.
I don't want to go there. I just
that's another day.
You need to do that. You know, there are other people who are deeply involved in this number one issue in the world, but that
correct.
Issue really was never part of your case. And we have seen things in discovery materials that I would say suggest there may be a connection.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it at that.
I'm in a position here that if
the so-called other side would like some time to respond to these things, I, as a professional, indeed offer it. And we'll leave it at that.
Exactly. And I would like
well,
to be cleared
to
up, too.
Yeah, no. That's been on the table. I've just put it there. So,
but I think that the major reason that I wanted this interview was to gather the names of, which would be very private, right, of individuals who have similar cases that have not been publicized at all by the media in any one of the 50 states. So there are a lot of grieving Americans out there. We are the least. At least Sam is alive.
A lot of people have lost their... Yeah, I know.
We have to become an organized group. They don't want us to know one another.
Would you like them to contact you, Charlotte? And if so, how do you want them...
Yes,
how do you want them to do that?
I do... Well, I don't know. They can go to my website. Anybody can find me, you know.
All right. Deliberatedumbingdown.com.
That's right. And I just want to feel that we have, that Sam's incident has perhaps allowed others to know that this is going on, and they've had it in their own states, and so that we can get together and, like, take Black Lives Matter. It's a huge outfit. We've got to, the blacks are terribly important in this thing. I always laughingly say the blacks, they move too much, so they always get shot. Sam didn't move. And, you know, so we're all in this together. I can't stand this breaking up of our country into different groups, different religions and all, which is the purpose of the media. And we've got to stick together. We've got to work together. Work together with the blacks. Work together with whoever. The people that are being abused in this country by the judicial system, which is changing, and is changing because of the new police training.
Okay, what we have here,
Jeff,
is...
Jeff, I want to tell you one thing.
Yeah, go ahead, Sam.
My life did not go down the drain until I became involved in trying to protect somebody who is involved in a situation as a mother where the boyfriend of the child was a pedophile. And that's where my life went down the drain.
Well, look, citizens who, human beings who try to do good often are the ones who get trashed. That's just the way it goes.
Right, but pedophilia is where it all started, because I've never had anybody put a head in my life.
Yeah, no good deed goes unpunished.
And all of a sudden, everything went down south because I met somebody who, her son was taken away from her.
All right. Well, that's CPS, and there's another story.
Murderer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
well, we'll do that next time.
Right.
But let's just deal with yours, Sam. I just want to make it very clear that we do not have any solid evidence in regard to the other issue. That people know this. I've sent out a big email thing on this issue, the P issue, I call it. And to me, I consider it the number one issue in the world.
Well, it is. And, it is probably just that, but we can't really go there and spend much time, because it's not relevant to the actual case.
Thing.
The hospital did actually give a positive on the fact that the child had been abused.
All right, but that's still not relevant to the line
story
we're talking
about. That we will do later. You know,
tonight.
The wonderful thing right. about Jeff is I can get on and you can get on if we ever have what we have right now. All the evidence that we've talked about today came from the documents that we were given
and
in
the
discovery.
Recording. Shocking.
And the recording.
Shocking
so we're,
recording.
We're not making up anything.
Right.
As far as the other issue is concerned, we don't have documents. We don't have a lot of that stuff. That's not our issue.
What is
right
your
now.
Plan, Charlotte, to do? What are you going to do next as far as this case? Since the thing is officially now closed, what
well,
can you do?
We're going to go after our lawyer, and we're going to report him somehow.
Doesn't sound like
well,
he was your lawyer.
What?
Doesn't sound like he was working for you.
He wasn't, and that's the point. And people out there who don't have lawyers working for them, they can also submit a report to whatever agency it is in their state that the case was mishandled. And that's what we're going to do, and we're going to get the dismissal dismissed.
That's
we're going
very,
to get,
yeah.
get rid of the
right.
dismissal.
Well, I think we only have a minute left here. Let me back up here now. For all of you listening, go read the document under Charlotte's name in Guests for a succinct summary of what happened here. It's very difficult to do this in a conversational interview format. And again, I do extend an offer to the other side if they would like to come on the program and explain their position.
Oh, boy,
they're
yes, I wish you would.
They're certainly welcome. That's being a professional
yeah.
journalist.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make yeah. it clear. Just a second, Sam. I'll give you a chance. Hold on. I want to make it clear that you can take Charlotte at her word. If you have a case like this or anything remotely like this where there has been a cover-up, a miscarriage of justice, attempted murder, a murder, you name it. She's inviting you to contact her at deliberatedumbingdown.com. deliberatedumbingdown.com. Write to Charlotte. Share your story. She will pay attention. All right, Sam, final word, real quick.
Final word, is basically the fact that they went in the direction where we obviously had the situation of 911 not calling anybody to protect me and to actually get an ambulance here to my house.
Took 21 minutes to get an ambulance to you, is that right?
Yes. And funeral artists...
No, it wasn't 21, not 21 minutes to get an ambulance. It was 21 minutes plus to actually call for an ambulance.
That's
oh, my
right.
God.
It was 35
and
minutes
so
before
never,
he got to the
they
hospital.
Never called.
Wow.
Good.
This is almost as bad as Princess Diana taking 40 minutes to go 5 miles. Yeah.
It's quite similar. Sam only lives three houses away from the hospital. Three houses away.
Fred could have dragged me to the hospital if he said he was the friend he was.
Yep.
But
absolutely.
You know, nobody took me to the hospital.
Unbelievable.
So, you know, that whole situation is just...
All right, well, the key... All right, we have to say goodnight, but the key points... to this case, almost defy belief of what's happened here. Clearly, all the indications are, as Charlotte has written them, for you to consider. So do consider that. And if you have a case of similar note, you want to write, you feel like you need someone to talk to, write to Charlotte. Share your story. You can all learn and maybe help each other.
Please, if you don't hear from me right away, I would love to have thousands of letters from you all, but I can't. I'm only one person. I can't handle a thousand letters a day.
All right. Let me wrap this up. Now, Sam, thank you very much. I'm very grateful you're alive and still here. I mean, seriously.
Yep.
All right.
And the other thing was that the delay of the ambulance actually created brain damage.
Yep.
Oh, my. Well, see, there's another lawsuit.
I know. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Sam, you take care. You sound very sharp, and whatever it is you're suffering, I hope it eventually mitigates and gets completely well. Take care of yourself.
Well, Jeff, it's great. You're still there.
Well, that's all right.
All I can say is I want to say to all the audience, too, I don't know what I would have done. I mean... I always want to get the word out for all of you, but without Jeff, it would never have happened.
Well,
so please spread the word about Jeff. I mean, really, who else is telling it like it is this way?
Well, thank you. We try. All right, you two, take care.
Okay,
good night.
Good night, everybody. God bless everybody.
Okay, thank you. All right. Well, and once again, third time, the other parties involved are welcome to come on this program. And if they feel like they have something to say, they can say it. All right. We'll be right back with hour number three.
Disease-fighting oxygen with all-natural Oxy-C. With so many people now leading a sedentary indoor lifestyle, most are in a chronic state of oxygen deprivation, which sets up a perfect environment for disease, general fatigue, and a host of other symptoms. Oxy-C is yours in simple, convenient capsules. Nothing to mix, nothing to hassle with. Take it with juice or water anytime. Feel a cold or flu approaching? Have no energy or spark anymore? Try all natural Oxy-C and prepare to be amazed. Oxy-C is only available from New Earth Health Solutions at Rinse.com. Look for the New Earth banner at Rinse.com.
Are you prepared for the future? Do you know how to navigate past the upcoming dangers before it's too late and seize budding opportunities before others do? Forecasting worldwide since 1980, Gerald Celeni, publisher of the Trends Journal, provides timely and accurate trend forecasts that have earned him the reputation as the most trusted name in trends. The proof is in the hundreds of accurate forecasts Celeni has made over the past 30 years. The 1987 stock market crash, the clean food trend, the dot-com bust. The Trends Journal alerts subscribers to early subtle signs of crucial trends that will shape our future. It allows readers to anticipate change, recognize the implications, and take proactive strategies. Put your money where your mind is with Gerald Celeni's brilliant and indispensable Trends Journal. Go to trendsjournal.com or call 845-331-3500. That's 845-331-3500. 3500.